Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Welcome back to Stomp This Way. I'm excited this week because we're going back to the classics, Andrew. The root of this podcast, more or less, with another classic Toho film with most of our usual suspects behind the camera and in front of the camera. How you feeling this week?
Oh, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of shocked that we didn't get to this movie in the original iteration of this podcast.
I know.
But we're getting to it now. So.
Hey, better late than never.
Better late than never. That's true. Well, I'm talking about the film Space Amoeba, or bringing back a classic segment of alternate titles. The original Japanese title is translated as Gezora, Ganymedes, and Comibus, Battle. Giant Monsters of the South Seas. Or, an alternate English title, Yogg, Monster from Space. In Brazil, they called it The Invaders from Space. The Dutch called it The Danger Came from Space. In Mexico, they simply called it Internal Monsters. That sounds like some kind of serious drama.
Yeah.
In Italy, they called it Pentaculus and Adam, The Monster of the Galaxy. In Turkey, they simply called it Space Monster. And in West Germany, because that was back when Germany was divided in two, it was called Monsters of Horror Attack. So, yeah.
Every country had their own little title for this movie.
Yeah. Just like the good old, when we, you know, when we did all those Godzilla movies and they all had crazy titles for different countries.
Some of them didn't even make sense.
Yeah. Usually they had Frankenstein in the title.
For some reason.
All right, so some production trivia. This was Ishiro Honda's last film before he left Toho, his contract he had with Toho. He would return one last time for Terror Mechagodzilla as director. This was the first kaiju film made by Toho after the death of Tsuburaya. I believe he actually died like 2 days into production. So sad. It was originally written by A. Ogawa in 1966, but not put into production until 1969 with a heavily edited script. Toho rejected a proposal to dedicate the film to Tsuburaya, which angered special effects director Sadamasa Arikawa, who was his protege that ended up taking over on this movie. Honda wanted to film in Guam, but was forced to film on Hachijo Island due to the lack of budget. Shot in the middle of winter, although the cast had to pretend that the weather was tropical.
No.
I mean, I don't think it was that cold on the island, but it probably wasn't near as warm as they were dressed for.
No.
The last tokusatsu film made under Toho's studio system before Toho established a subsidiary to handle such films and dissolving Tsuburaya's special effects department. The English title Yogg refers to a creature from Lovecraftian stories. The Prayer Song is a rearrangement of the song from King Kong vs. Godzilla with the lyrics changed, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Selgio Island is probably, possibly named after director Sergio Leone. Maybe. And Comibus would reappear as a corpse in Tokyo SOS. So, yeah. Yeah. Box office. There's not much out there on the box office of this movie. It was released in Japan on August 1st. Of 1970, and then AIP put it out in the U.S. sometime in 1971. And we did watch the AIP dub.
Yeah.
This viewing. So, You know, they IP dubs. They're not bad.
It could have been worse.
They're pretty watchable. So anyway, we're going to listen to a trailer. We're going to come back. We're going to read off the cast and crew, read off a plot summary that I just wrote. And then we're going to review Space Amoeba. See you in a bit.
From the remote areas of outer space, a creature lands on Earth. This fearful creature becomes a monster. Terrifying monsters. An octopus. A giant crab. A huge lizard. They're beautiful, aren't they? A group of brave people face these monsters. A daring photographer, a beautiful girl, a biologist, and a guy who does everything wrong as an industrial spy. These monsters appear to be overwhelmingly superior to their human enemies. Brave people be able to destroy the monsters? Come and see this exciting and terrifying battle for survival.
All right, we're back. This film is directed by Ishiro Honda, written by A. Ogawa, music by Akira Fukube, effects by Sanamasa Arikawa, and starring Akira Kubo, Atsuko Takahashi, Yukiko Kobayashi, Kenji Sahara, Yoshio Tsuchiya, Ichiro Murakoshi as the space amoeba voice, I guess, Haruo Nakajima as Gazora, and Ganymese, I don't know how you say it, and Haruyoshi Nakamura as Kamibus. So Gazora is they say octopus in the dub, but it's pretty clearly supposed to be a squid.
Yeah.
Ganymede is the crab, and Kamibus is the turtle. So let's just get that clear up front. But anyway, let me read this kind of monstrous plot summary I just wrote. I don't know why I made it so long. Anyway, Taro Kudo is a freelance photographer who is hired by a hotel company to take some photos of the natural beauty of an island they plan to develop for a resort. Tagging along are company rep Ayako Hoshino, biologist Dr. Mita, and self-proclaimed anthropologist, but secret corporate spy, Obata. Once they arrive on the island, they quickly realize that all is not right. Another company employee has already been killed by the creature, and a survivor claims it was a giant squid. Kudo and Dr. Mita encounter the squid, dubbed Gezora, on a dive, and are nearly killed before it mysteriously releases them. Gazora then attacks a local hut, killing the survivor of the first attack, and leaving local guide Rico shell-shocked. Kudo and the gang eventually learn to use fire against Gazora, and they seemingly defeat the giant squid. However, the threat is not simply a giant cephalopod. Gazora was actually possessed and mutated by space aliens who had commandeered a space shuttle meant for Jupiter and flown it back to Earth. The space creatures then infect a giant crab, dubbed Ganymede, and use the creature to terrorize the humans. However, Kudo shoots out both of its eyes and blows it up by igniting some gas canisters. After Rico comes to and realizes that Gezora left him alone after some bats arrived, Dr. Mita surmises that high-pitched sound waves are a weakness for the space aliens, since Gezora left he and Kudo alone after a pod of dolphins swam past. However, the space amoeba have now possessed Obata, and have used his body to kill the bats on the island. The space creatures have also infected and mutated a giant turtle named Kamibus. Kudo and the gang find one last cave untouched by Obata, but Obata shows up and tries to kill these bats as well. However, Obata fights against the creatures inhabiting his body, and he releases the bats before they can be burned alive. The space amoeba have mutated another crab creature, but the bats set Comebus and Ganymedes free from the mind control of the aliens. Reverting back to wild animals, the two monsters fight, before eventually falling into the island's volcano. Obata, in order to kill the last alien possessing him, jumps in after them. As credits roll. More or less.
More or less.
More or less.
You know, that's the longest plot summary we've wrote in a while.
I know, I just kind of kept going with that. And I didn't proofread it before I just read it, so... Anyway.
It didn't sound too bad.
I was trying to read over some typos. I stumbled a little bit. That's okay. But anyway. So, Space Amoeba. Like I said, I'm excited this week. I was excited this week. I mean, obviously, I've seen this film a couple times before. But this is the first time in a long while that we reviewed a classic. I would say golden era. This was kind of...
It was at the end of the golden
era. Yeah, this is kind of... On the other side of the golden era. This was 1970. They were already slashing budgets and, you know, really cutting corners on these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Tsuburaya died early into production of this movie, so he was gone. Aogawa was not one of our typical writers that we've heard a lot on this podcast in the early days, but we still have Ishiro Honda here at the tail end of his career. Fukube, who would work for many more years, but he did the score. We'll talk about it later, of course. But anyway, let's just get into the plot of this movie. So the movie starts off with, and actually I think a really good, great shot of a model rocket with like the sun setting behind it or whatever. And, you know, they're launching a probe into space. They're mm-hmm. sending it to Jupiter, but it gets infected by... blue space dust, as I called it, and falls back to Earth. Kudo sees it. Like, he's the only person that sees it, I think,
mm-hmm.
land back to Earth, which is a little convenient, odd, that he's, like, the only person, human, that knows that that happened, and nobody, I guess, from any space agency knows it. But,
it was back in the 70s.
I mean...
They didn't have high-tech things to detect stuff.
I guess. I don't know exactly how their radar systems and everything work, but yeah. Anyway, so he sees it, but no one believes him, and he needs a job, we gather, because I guess his last job, he didn't get any good photos.
No.
So this hotel company hires him to, like, go take photos of this island that they're planning on building a resort on, and they're going to send this biologist, Dr. Mita, with him. Kudo, by the way, is played by Akira Kubo, you know, an actor we've seen on this podcast many times.
Yeah.
And Dr. Mita is played by Yoshio Tsuchiya, who is an actor that we've talked on this podcast about quite a bit. And, of course, they're joined by a young female lead. Her name was Atsuko Takahashi. And on the cruise over there, they meet, you know, one of the podcast favorites, Kenji Sahara. He's yeah. playing your kind of stereotypical mustache twirling villain.
Yeah.
You know, he says he's an anthropologist, but he's actually works for a competitor. He's trying to commit a little bit of corporate espionage, you know, as one does. I like Kenji Sahara's performance in this movie. You know, it is kind of stereotypical, like I said, but he's also bringing a lot of fun energy into it.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like him later, like when he gets possessed by the alien and like the little eyebrow twitches and nostril flares and stuff that he does, and that kind of deadpan look that he gets, that eye look he gets on his face. I like Kenji Sahara a lot in this movie. And Akira Kubo, I think the whole cast, as usual, is good. Akira Kubo is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Just the whole cast. We also have them joining with a couple of islanders, mainly Rico. I told Andrew we should have had a Rico counter on this movie. I think they say his name about 200 times.
A lot.
They also scream Obata a lot in this movie.
Especially towards the end.
Especially towards the end. Rico towards the beginning and Obata towards the end. But yeah, so we see early on in the movie, two company employees that are already on the island are going fishing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them gets killed by Gezora. So when Kudo and Crew get to the island, they're met by Rico and the survivor from that attack. And he's, you know, traumatized. But Kudo and Dr. Mita go on a dive
mm-hmm.
and find the squid. And it gets them. But then some dolphins swim by and it lets them go. But then Gezora comes up and attacks the hut that Rico and the other guy that survived that initial attack are in and kills the survivor guy. But Rico is totally shell-shocked.
Oh, yeah.
Like, pretty much a walking zombie. And the things they drag poor
Rico.
Comatose Rico around this whole movie. It's silent, like, cross-eyed. Rico!
And the girl tries to marry him at one point like this.
Yeah, his girlfriend shows up. And, yeah, she decides that while he's totally nonverbal and looks like his brain is empty, they're going to have a wedding.
Because she thinks this is going to help him bring him back.
I guess. Maybe in reality, he probably had turned her down previously, but that this is her chance to get him tied down, baby. But during the wedding, Kudo takes some pictures and the flashes like bring his memory back and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers that Gezora left when some bats showed up. So Dr. Mita makes a lot of wild jumps of logic. Of course, he's right on all the accounts. But like after, let's see, Gezora, they get some fire and they fight him off or whatever. And then I think after the crab shows up, he's like, you know, he like figures out the whole plot. He's like, some space creatures must have come back on that probe and, you know, infected these local wildlife and mutated them. And these space creatures, they're really smart and advanced and their means cannot be good. They've got to be evil. Like, he makes a lot of
wild jumps in logic.
Yeah, wild jumps to a lot of conclusions there. I was like, okay, whatever. But
he's a smart guy, though.
He's a smart guy. He knows what he's talking about. Anyway, so yeah, Gezora, they fight him off the fire. So then the space aliens jump to a giant crab. But Kudo, who's like a freaking crack shot.
God.
Photography must be a good practice for sniping.
You have to have steady hands.
Gotta have steady hands, that's right. He like takes out both the eyes of this crab and then leads it over a cliff and then like shoots some gas canisters that are sitting there kind of conveniently and blows it up. So then the crab takes over Obata.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, we hear their inner voice and it tells them their whole evil plot that they want to take over all human bodies. Basically, invasion of the body snatchers plot going on here in the kaiju movie. You know, they use him to like burn up the bats so the bats can't hurt them. But we also figure out at this point that they can, I guess, take over multiple bodies at one time because they take over Turtle, Kamibus, and it chases Kudo around, but chases Kudo right into the last bat cave that he hasn't burned yet. So, you know, they all kind of pile into this bat cave and sleep for the night.
With the bats.
And then they have hatch this plan to, like, capture the bats in the cave so that they can kind of, you know, release them when they need them, I guess.
Yeah.
But then Obata shows up and, you know, tries to burn out the bats. But, you know, I guess Obata wasn't that bad of a guy, even though he's kind of being sleazy the whole movie, because he fights against the influence of the aliens. And
mm-hmm.
After he lights the fire, he's able to take control of his body enough to, like, pull
the
door off and free the bats. And then he kind of stumbles off by himself. And then the bats, like, so the aliens have also mutated another crab, but the bats, like, set them free from their, you know, possession or whatever. And then they get into a big fight. And then, you know, we kind of have the cliche ending that was, you know, kind of definitely cliche by this point in kaiju cinema where, oh, a random volcano starts erupting and the two monsters fall into it.
And then Obata goes up to the volcano and jumps in himself to get rid of the last bit of the alien organism.
Yeah, even though he was a jerk, he made a noble sacrifice at the end. What a hero.
What a guy.
I don't know how Dr. Mita, again, making assumptions that that is the last alien, they could have possessed all kinds of creatures for all he knows, but...
But they would be
they
giant.
Could be possessed themselves.
But they would be giant.
I guess. Not necessarily. They didn't turn Kenji Sahara giant.
That would just be weird.
Now, listen, I mean, like we said at the beginning, this is not the peak kaiju era.
No.
They obviously had budget limitations with this movie. I mean, I talked about in the production trivia, he wanted to film this on Guam, but the studio was like, no, you're going to a local island. But, you know, it's not terrible either. I mean, no. I think they got a pretty good cast on this movie. I think the cast is pretty fun in their roles. I think it's only 84 minutes, so it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty well paced. There's action, monster action, about every 10 or 15 minutes. I think, you know, the plot is, you know, kind of rote, but I mean, it's kind of what you would expect. Kind of a combination of, like I said, Invasion of the Body Snatchers and a kaiju movie,
mm-hmm.
Which I think makes for a fairly entertaining 84 minutes. So, you know, I've got no real complaints with the plot of this movie, the structure of this movie, anything like that. I mean, it's not great, you know.
But it could be worse.
It could be a lot worse. So.
Just wait till next week.
Wait till next week, yeah. we'll talk about that later. Getting into creature design, we have Gezora first. Like I said, they call it an octopus in the dub. Clearly, it's supposed to be a giant squid.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like a giant squid walking upright. I don't really care for the eyes. Like, you know, Toho, for the most part, was able to keep away from, like, the cheap light-up eyes. And Gezora kind of has the blinking light-up eyes that look like cheap plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was kind of unfortunate. But, you know, and it's obvious that a lot of the tentacles are just dangling, you know, appendages that he just kind of drags behind him. The wire work is not peak wire work or anything, but, you know, he's fine.
He's all right.
He resembles a squid.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what they're going for.
Yeah. And then we have Ganymede, who is the crab.
Yes.
Looks more like a shrimp to me. I don't know.
The face does, but the body looks like a crab.
I don't know. He's kind of got the tail curled up under him like a shrimp or a lobster. And the pinchers are smaller.
And he has the shell shape of a crab.
Yeah, I guess kind of. They call out a specific species of crab. I don't know if it was a real species or what it actually looks like. But anyway. But, you know, he does look like a crustacean.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the wire work on his claws is fine, I guess.
Yeah.
And he moves pretty well, so. And the eye, wire work on the eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty neat when, you know, it shoots out the eyes and are like deflated and bleeding and stuff.
Yeah.
So. And then, of course, Kamibus. We've talked about Kamibus before when we reviewed Tokyo SOS. It was the dead carcass that Godzilla had clawed the neck up and had washed ashore on the beach. It's a giant turtle.
Yeah.
You know, he does the like gamma thing where he like more extreme than gamma, where he like sticks his neck way out.
Yeah.
And checks it. He's got some like pretty big fangs on his mouth.
No fire breath though.
No fire breath. But yeah. Giant turtle.
Giant turtle.
Looks fine. And effects, again, no major complaints really. I mean, of course, like I said, budget constrained, you know, they can tell that whenever they didn't have a budget, they would set these movies on an island. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to build these giant cityscapes. They build a little hut village and a couple of extra huts that they destroy and some fake trees, obviously. They have a physical prop that they use at times for Gezora's tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
The one effect that I really recoiled at was sometimes instead of using that physical prop, they would like just animate tentacles picking up people and grabbing them.
Yeah.
That looked pretty bad. You know, the matting and compositing shots, are fine. I mean, some of them look worse than others, but nothing just consistently atrocious.
No.
Explosions and fire and all that's nice. You know, like again, like I said, I mean, some of the bats, you know, there's some animated bats and some like prop bats that don't look good.
No.
But, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. You can't have everything.
Can't have everything. But yeah, nothing major that I can complain about, especially considering on the type of budget they were working on. Yeah. So
they did the best they could with what they had.
Yeah. And then score. Listen, I'm never going to complain about a classic Ifukube-based score. It feels like he probably didn't have a lot of time to work on this movie. He's got maybe two or three original pieces of music that, I mean, might be original to this. I haven't heard them outside of this movie, really.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is also recycled material, which he does that for a lot of the movies we've reviewed. But, I mean, there's no real, like, standout piece of music. But I can listen to an Ifukube soundtrack all day, every day. So, that one track that plays over the play menu, it did get old after a little bit.
Oh, it played over the play menu in the whole beginning of
the
that
beginning.
Movie.
And at the end of the credits, yeah. But anyway.
You know.
You want to go with some final thoughts?
Why not? Fine. That this movie, it was good for what it was. You know, had decent acting, decent effects, you know. Okay score for, well, what little score they had. They only had like two, maybe three pieces of music. And, you know, I like the monsters. The monsters looked all right. Some of them looked better than others, like the octopus/squid looking thing. It was like probably the worst looking of the three monsters they had. The suit just did not look like they put a lot of effort into making it look that good of a suit. You could tell that it was cheaply made.
Yeah.
The other two, they were all right. The turtle suit actually looked pretty good. The crab-looking suit looked pretty good. The eyes looked cool. And, you know, the explosions and all the practical effects they had in this movie, they were fine as always, you know. Can't go wrong with a good explosion here and now and then.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the acting, all the actors were pretty good. They're all seasoned actors by this point. Most of them, at least, were.
Yeah.
So they knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll give this movie a C.
A C? All right, yeah. Listen, someone who didn't have an affinity for old Toho kaiju flicks would probably watch this movie and be like, that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, like I said, I'm nostalgic for these kind of movies. This is not peak Toho kaiju era filmmaking right here, but there's still a lot of the elements of that era that are here and done well enough that I can appreciate this movie. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of kaiju action. I like the fact that these are kind of smaller scale monsters, so they're more of a threat to individual humans, which is always nice. Yeah, the suits aren't the best. Effects aren't the best. I wish there was more city, you know, I always prefer city destruction over these island settings, and, you know, some of the compositing shots could be done better. There's definitely some, you know, scenes and effect shots that I wish were done differently, but, you know, I enjoy this movie to an extent. I mean, it's, like I said, only 84 minutes. I just kind of like the old school, you know, kind of take an old sci-fi trope like in Body Snatchers and throw it into a kaiju movie and do that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a fine movie if you enjoy old school Toho tokusatsu flicks. I think this one's worth checking out. I'll give it a C+.
Wow.
But yeah, I don't think we have any news particularly important. I would just say a couple things I've been meaning to say. I keep forgetting. You know, if you on YouTube, if you watch Watch Mojo, because of Minus One and Godzilla Kong coming out pretty soon, they've been doing a lot of Godzilla lists recently. Like, you know, sometimes I don't always agree. Hardly ever really agree with their lists, but they're just kind of fun to sit through. Like, they had one the other day. They did, like, kill count and Godzilla movies. And those numbers had to be totally arbitrary because I don't think Toho has those official numbers posted anywhere. Mm-hmm. But it was just kind of fun to see their logic and see what numbers they conjured up. But, yeah. But, oh, and I was going to say, me and Andrew the other day, night before last, watched that latest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of turns into a kaiju movie at the end. It's like, I don't know, we might have to swing back around to that one.
If we get desperate enough.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to do all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies, but we might come back to that one. It was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. If, you know, it's on Amazon Prime. If you got queen age kids, it's a good movie for the
family.
Or
you just really love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, if you're just a freaking nerd. Sorry.
And we watched it.
We did watch it. Yeah. I've never been obsessed with TMNT. That phase kind of passed me by, I guess. But
I love the original live action ones.
Yeah, yeah. Those were something. But anyway, I think that's it. Other than if you're a fan of Demon Slayer, that event, whatever you want to call it, is out in theaters right now. Yeah. Like they did last time. They take like the last two episodes of the last season and the first episode or two of the new season and put it out in theaters.
They did a better job on it this time than last
time. Like last time, you had to watch the intro and end credits four times.
Yeah, they literally just put all the episodes.
Yeah. This time they actually
edited
out most of the intros and then outros.
They kind of abridged it more.
Yeah. So it was a better viewing experience. But anyway, that was off size rant.
Yeah.
As Andrew alluded to, we got a bad one coming up next week. We are, you know, I could have sworn that we reviewed this movie, but I went through our whole catalog of episodes and it's not on there.
Maybe that one.
Maybe it got lost in translation, but we're going to review Reptilicus because it is kind of a, I don't want to say classic, notorious monster movie. So we got to cover it. So we'll be watching that next week. And then we are about just a little over a month away from our next big theatrical event. Godzilla Kong, the new empire, whatever it is.
Oh, yay.
We saw the trailer for it on the big screen today in front of Demon Slayer. So that was neat.
That was something.
But anyway. I think that's all we got for you this week. Don't forget that you can always visit our website at
stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right. And you can always contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Stomp This Way. I think that's it. Thank you for listening. As always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we'll see you next week.